Okay, we are still in Parakeet Tet, chapter 19, which we talked about at least for 1 week, maybe even two at this point. We were talking about the cities of Shimon, and we addressed the question of what happened to Shimon between the first census in the beginning of the Midbar and then the last census at the end, where they shrunk. And we talked about ideas for why Shimon shrunk, and then we talked about Shimon being scattered in Yehuda, being given cities rather than getting their own portion. And we talked about the question of how this fit with the idea of the seven lots that were identified by the surveyors, as well as how you could take cities from Yehuda. Were those cities ever meant to be Yehuda's cities? And that we already dealt with last week, so you can catch the recording. But that brought us to a discussion about the next Shvatim, the next tribes, which start in Pasuk Yud, sentence 10. And that is Zebulun and Yisachar, who are the two sort of middle north Shvatim. And once again, I gave you the map, the Wikipedia map on the back of your sheet, more for convenience than because I think that it's entirely right. It's not. Yeah, Zebulun and Yisachar are the two sort of darker blobs underneath Asher and Naphtali. If you print it out at home, it's in color, you know. Well, if I would print it on a color printer, it would also be in color. But if you look at it on your computer, it'll be in color, and that may help. But those two sort of, circles under Asher and Naphtali and above Menasheh are Zebulun and Yisachar. We already noted last time that Zebulun is understood to reach to the sea. And so there's some debate as to how exactly that works, and we're going to come back to that. But the relationship between Zebulun and Yisachar was something we talked about a little bit last time, and the idea of Yisachar learning and Zebulun engaging in business and the potential connection back to the business deal that caused their birth in the first place with the story of the Dudaim between Rachel and Leah. We talked about listing Zebulun first, even though Yisachar is older. And that brought us to Zebulun's lot and the geography of it. So the way that the Navi is going to outline this, starting with Pasuk Yud, is that it's going to start in the middle of Zebulun's southern border and then go west along the border and then return to the middle spot and go east along the border to the eastern end of it. We've done this before. When we saw Menasheh's border, they did the same thing with Michmetat, where they started from the middle, worked their way one direction, and then went back to the middle and worked their way the other direction, presumably because that focal point in the middle was something everybody knew. And so it was a good place, and you didn't go east to west, starting from, let's say, the eastern end, which was unfamiliar to people, or the western end, which was unfamiliar to people. It made more sense to pick the landmark, even though it means doing something which, you know, to me is counterintuitive, where you go to the middle, your border is here to here, and then here to here. Are we sort of clear about what I was just saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. But that's the way it's going to work, is outline the southern border for Zebulun to begin with. So two other points along the way. We said, and I think I brought it for you on the sheet last time, but it's not on the sheet this time because I didn't reproduce the brachos here. I could have. Oh well. But we noted last time that Zebulun's bracha is Zebulun l'chof yamim yishkon, which means Zebulun dwells by the shore of the seas. So even if we say he reaches the Mediterranean, I still don't know how that it translates into their border being by seas, plural. How do they reach bodies of water? So if you take a look at the first source I brought you on the sheet, Dan Mikra, in a footnote, explains. He says, Gam nachlaz zebulun mituchemet mishloshes evareha bimikoros mayim. He says, Zebulun's portion is bounded on three sides by bodies of water. Badarom, in the south, nachal asher al pnei Yokna'am. It's going to refer to a wadi that fronts Yokna'am. A wadi, keep in mind, isn't a true body of water. A wadi is a dry area that gets flash floods and runoff, and that's the way it becomes filled with water. But that's on its southern border. Batzafon geyiftach el, and then on the north you have another one, a valley there. And then b'ma'arav hayamagadol, on the west you have the Mediterranean Sea. So Zebulun is bounded by water on three out of the four sides. The last side, the eastern side of it is Yisachar, so that's not going to work. But all the other ones are, in fact, bodies of water.
But even here, it's not really touching the sea.
Right, Right, so again, that's why what I mentioned in the beginning, that even though the map says that, it can't be so. And that's actually my next point. The Psukim don't make it clear that it reaches the sea, and it's true, our nice little map has them stop short. And I think the reason why it has them stop short is because when it gets to Asher, which you can see on the map is above Zebulun, it's going to talk about Asher reaching the sea. So if Asher is on the sea, then Zebulun is not. And I think that's why they do it that way in the map. However, number one, Zebulun l'chof yamim yishkon, Zebulun is supposed to be by the sea. And number two, in that same bracha, you get this odd phrase, which really only makes sense once you see the map, in which it says, v'yarkaso al Sidon. The side of Zebulun is at Sidon. Sidon isn't marked on the map. Actually, it is marked on the map. I take that back. Yeah, I think it is, but it's a little too small for me to really tell. I can just pretend then, because no one can read it. But if you see where there's a little dot in the northwest corner of Asher, roughly there is where Sidon is supposed to be. Right, you have it on your map there, all the way on the top. Top left, yeah. Right. So the question is, how in the world do they end up in Sidon? And the Pasuk says, Yarkaso, their side, is up to Sidon. So commentators look at that and suggest either that they actually had a long coastal stretch, so they went sort of along the bottom of Asher and then up the coast, and that, along the lines of, I think TK had mentioned a couple of weeks ago, the idea that somehow that his lot resembles a boat. So you can sort of imagine that as being boat-like if you do, you know, if you look at it that way. Sort of the bottom of the boat is along the shoreline, and then it, you know, the sort of the front of the boat, the prow, is up, you know, the part going up to what we mark as Zebulun. That's one way to look at it. The problem with that is that Asher is supposed to reach the sea, and if you've done that, you've taken away Asher's coastline.
Maybe share.
So, well, maybe. Or the answer simply is that Zebulun actually has multiple sites. In other words, they have the area that we have marked here, and they also have Sidon as a satellite. That may sound strange to you, but when we get to Dun, we're going to find out that Dun does the same thing. That Dun has the area which, we'll see, is if you go down on the map to where Ephraim is, and you go west of Ephraim, there's Dun. But on the other hand, Dun is going to get land way up in the northeast, a place called Leshem, which you don't see here. So it's weird to have non-contiguous territory within a Shevet. It sort of runs counter to our understanding of the way these things are supposed to work, but it's possible. And we'll talk about that when we get to Dun. But that may be another way that all the different pieces work. Asher gets the coastline. However, Zebulun also has shoreline in their area up in Sidon.
That's a question.
Yeah.
I'm trying to understand what the point of dividing things so that they should be clear and then writing them unclearly so that it's not clear. Like, it doesn't really make sense that they're writing it all down, spending a whole, you know, paragraph or more or lots of it on it, and then we walk away saying, but we're not really sure what the division is.
Right, two things. One is you do have to sort of keep in mind who writes this down. Mm-hmm. You know, this is written down by people who actually knew the cities that we're talking about, who lived in the cities that we're talking about. So it's a lot easier to imagine this if you actually know. And for half of these places, Dad Mikro, which is working with all the archaeological digs and identifications, still says, I don't know where that is. So once you don't know where the locations are, you're stuck. Whereas they're writing it down, not thinking at all that there are going to be, you know, 2,000 years of exile in which we're going to completely lose track of everything. So I think that's, you know, sort of a major piece of why there's confusion. But in terms of the specific issue of how are they, you know, by the water, you know, given this, I think it actually is relatively clear. What we're missing is mostly knowledge of the cities that would make it entirely clear. In other words, the bracha says you're going to be by the water and you have Sidon. The problem is I don't know how to work that with the cities because I don't know what these cities are. That would definitively respond. You know, that would definitively answer the question of whether they went up the shoreline or whether it was just a satellite. But yeah, it's not written with you know Galus Jews in mind. It's written for for Jews at a time when they actually lived there. And yeah, we're just stuck. So
also the fact that they were seamen, right?
Yeah.
Merchants.
Right. Well, that was it, right. We saw last time, we saw the Medrash about them going out to sea and acting as the middleman. Right. So, yes, that would require some kind of a shoreline hold, but again, being in Sidon, we'll do that. So let's take a look at the map. Not the map, sorry, at the Psukim. Yeah. And run through the cities themselves and the boundaries, such as they are. Vayal HaGoral HaShlishi Livnei Zivulun L'mishpach HaSam, we're in sentence 10. The third portion of these seven that are being distributed goes to Zivulun by their families. Vayi Gvul Nachal HaSam Ad Sarid. And their boundary was to Sarid. So Sarid is the central point on the southern border from which we're going to now move in each direction. So it's from Sarid, and then Va'alag Vulam Layama, their southern boundary is going to go towards the sea. And again, depending on how whether they reach the sea or not, will determine what you mean when you say towards the sea, or do you mean to the sea? Umar Allah, as well as this place of Mar'al, and again, this is one of those places where you look at it and say, I don't know what that is. But apparently it's a place. Dat Mikra says, Mikoma eno yadua bivevur. Its place is not clearly known. Okay. And then in the footnote he says, if you look in the Septuagint, it's possible to identify it with a place called Tel Alata. Okay. Ufaga bedabashes. It reaches a place called Dabeshet. Ufaga el hanachal asher al pnei yoknam. And then it reaches the nachal, this wadi, that is the eastern side of Yoknam. When it says al pnei in general, it means the eastern side. So it reaches the eastern side of Yoknam. From the fact that it didn't tell me it reaches the Mediterranean, that's what leads people to say that part of Zebulun doesn't reach the Mediterranean. Because if it did, in all the other ones that reach the Mediterranean, it says it gets to the sea. And it doesn't say that here. So that's why we assume that it actually doesn't arrive there. Vishav Misarid Kedma Mizrach HaShamesh. And then it tells us to go from Sarid east Ad Gibul Kislot Tavor, to the area of, or the boundary of, Kislot Tavor. Now, later on, they're going to talk about Oznot Tavor. Tavor is? Right, Mount Tavor, Har Tavor. So, later on, they're going to talk about the Ozen of Tavor, which means the top of the slope. Literally, Ozen is ear. Ksalot are sides, or Kislot as it's here. So, this is to the lower area of Tavor. That's where they go up to. That's where their land goes up to. And the rest of Tavor is going to be in Naphtali. Naphtali is getting the upper part of Mount Tavor. V'yatza el ha-Dovrat, v'ala yafia, goes out to Dovrat, and then, or ha-Dovrat, which could mean a grazing area, and then v'ala yafia goes up to Yafia, umisham avar kedma mizracha, from there it moves east, gita chefer, ita katzin. And that is very hard to translate. The Gita Chefer means to the city called Gat Chefer or Gat HaChefer. Ita Katzin means the city called Eit Katzin. So Gat HaChefer may be familiar. And I know Gat HaChefer. The Chidon people. Gat HaChefer is in Melachim Bet. It's Perek Yedalet Pasuk Chaf Hei. And it is the home city of Yonah. Which is interesting, given his career, right? Running away to the sea. The Yonah is from Zebulun, according to this. So maybe that makes sense of his instinct to go running off to sea. V'yatza Rimon hamitoar hane'ah. V'yatza Rimon, it goes out to a place called Rimon hamitoar. So the question is, what does the word mitoar mean? So Rashi and most of the commentaries say that it means to turn. We have the expression in the Chumash when it talks about borders of the vitaar hagavul. It's a reference to the border turning at that point towards ne'ah. And if I knew where ne'ah was, I would know what turning actually meant, where it's turning. But that's the that's at that stage. And then we're done with the southern border. according to Dan Mikra, we're now done with the northern border, and now we're on the we're done with the southern border, and now we're on the northern one. V'nasavo tamagvul mitzafon chanaton. That border now turns to go north of a place called Chanaton. And that ends at the valley of Yiftach El. And so, again, within the Dan Mikra's understanding of how this works, we saw back in source number one, Yiftach El is going to be the northern border, and you have another body of water there. And then you have the Katat v'Nahalal v'Shimron v'Yidala u'Beit Lachem, a whole series of cities that are going to be mentioned here, including one Beit Lachem, which is not the same as Beit Lachem by Yerushalayim. This is a different Beit Lachem.
Did we say there were a few of them?
Yes, we did. There were a few like that. But yes, we saw multiple Be'er Shevas. You see multiple Beit Lachems. There's multiple Beit El. There's multiple Mitzpah. Generally speaking, if your name is identifying something functional or a particular topographical feature, it will show up in more than one place. Right? There is a there's an Oceanside, California, and there's an Oceanside, New York. Because there's more than one ocean. I don't know, how does Hollywood make any sense in terms of geographic features? No. But there is more than one, right. So
Springfield.
Right. But if you have a Beit Lechem, and Beit Lechem is understood as the place where they store the grain, perhaps, as one suggestion for what it could mean, then different regions are going to have different Beit Lechems. That's just the way it's going to be. Mitzpah is, an outlook, right? Some kind of an outcropping that's higher than everything else, and it's a lookout point. So, there are multiple lookout points. V'katat v'nahalal v'shimron v'yid alo v'lachem. We just read that. Arim 12 v'chatzrehen. 12 cities. And for those who want to look back at the Malbim once again, he's got 4 in the final one, right? And he will say, because 4, you're just throwing in the remainder. For those who weren't here last time, we said the Malbim believes that, generally speaking, we do the cities in sets of 3 as you go through it. Okay. And then Zos Nachlas Bnei Zevulun Mishpachosam. So that is Zevulun's lot. He'arim ha'elav achatzrehen. These cities, as well as the villages around them. Okay, that's our Zevulun. The salient points, the things you really need to remember regarding Zevulun, are the close relationship with Yisachar, the question of whether Zevulun is actually reaching the shore, and if so, where. The Sidon issue, where Sidon is just way up north and not part of the rest of this otherwise contiguous section, and the fact that it's flanked by bodies of water, reflecting the bracha that they get from Yaakov. Moshe. That's Moshe's bracha.
Is Sidon in Lebanon?
Sorry?
Is Sidon in
actually, no. Yaakov's bracha. Yeah.
Is Sidon in Lebanon, or is that as far as...
Sidon is up in the area that is today Lebanon, yes. So that brings us to Yisachar. And it's not going to give us a lot of detail in terms of Yisachar's boundaries for a very simple reason. If you take a look back at the map, you've basically covered his boundaries. Right? You already covered Zvolun in the west. You already covered Menashe in the south. We're going to do Naphtali in the north in detail. So the only thing you need to say is, how far does Yisachar go in the east? And in fact, this idea of Zebul of Yisachar being enclosed among the others fits the bracha. The bracha that he gets is, and Roberta read the other translation from there last time, the bracha that he gets is that he is Rovetz Bein HaMishpatayim. He is sprawled among the Mishpatayim. So the question is, what does Mishpatayim mean? And most commentaries take it to mean the boundaries. It is between its boundaries. Now, everyone is between their boundaries. So what does that mean? The answer is, what it means to be between the boundaries is, it is completely surrounded by its brothers. There's nowhere for it to go. That's the idea of Reves Bein HaMishpatayim. As Roberta read, I think that one translates it as among the sheepfolds. Right? Was that what you read?
Yeah.
Which isn't inconsistent with the word boundaries, because keep in mind, what is the Torah's phrase for the place where the sheep graze? If you think of when Reuven and Gad and half of Manasseh are going to stay on the eastern side of the Yarden, and they're going to build places for the sheep. Those are called Gidrot Tzon, right? A geder is a fence, right? The bounding thing, because where do you graze sheep? In a fenced-in, bounded area. So it's not odd that a word that can mean boundaries can also mean sheepfolds. But the but Chizkuni says, it's source number 2 on your sheet, Roveitz Bein HaMishpetayim, sprawled between the borders, that's Nachala So Nachlalo Bein Tchumei Achav, because the portion he got was just in the middle of where his brothers were. That's the that's what Yisachar gets. And that's what we're going to see outlined here. So looking at the Psukim, we're looking at Yitzayin Tchav Bet, and we're going to go through it fairly quickly because it's basically listing a bunch of cities that we don't know about. L'Yisachar Yatzah HaGaral HaRvi'i, Yisachar gets the fourth out of the seven. L'Vnei Yisachar L'Mishpechosam, for their families. V'Yihi Gevulam Yisraela V'Haksulot V'Shunim. So their Gevul is Yisraela. Yisrael we know of. Yisrael is the scene of various battles within Tanakh. Navos, who has the vineyard that Achav wants, is in Yisrael. So the so Yisrael is a known place. Vak Sulot, Ksulot, that Mikra assumes is Kislot Tavor, the lower part of Tavor, which we've already made reference to in Zebulun. And then Shunim, we know. What's in Shunim? What would you call a woman who came from Shunim? A Shunamit. Right. So Abishaga Shunamit with David, the woman whose son Elisha brings back to life, right, is in Shunim. So actually, after I said we have all these cities we don't know anything about, right, two out of the three in this sentence, Yisrael and Shunim are fairly well known, but the rest of them. V'chafarayim v'shion v'anocha rat. V'harabit v'kishon v'avetz v'remet v'ein ganim v'ein chada u'beit patzeitz. All of these are cities that are there within this this terrain of the land of Yisachar. Ufagah ha-gevul b'tavor. His boundary reaches Tavor, right, which makes sense because it was the boundary of Zebulun also, and it's in fact going to be part of Naphtali. It's sort of the meeting point of the three Shvatim is basically going to be Har Tavor, which is good, right? You want a mountain for a place like that. You want a place that everybody will recognize. So Mount Tavor is going to be it. Bishachatzima uBeit Shemesh. There's another Beit Shemesh. And the end of their boundary is, their eastern boundary is, the Yarden. Arim Shesh Esrei V'chatzrehen, 16 altogether. Zos Nachlas Matei B'nei Yisachar L'Mishpachosam He'arim V'chatzrehen. That is the boundary of Yisachar, their cities, and their villages. That's Yisachar. And again, the key things that you want to remember are the Yisachar Zevulun relationship and the fact that he's embedded in with everybody else, and that's why we don't need to give a whole lot of description of his boundary, but he has some famous cities. Yisrael is there, and Shunem is there. And that leaves us with three tribes to go. The three tribes that remain are the three northernmost tribes, Asher and Naphtali, and Dan, who is actually south here, but will have a little bit of north, this Leshem that I mentioned before, which we may get to today, we'll have to see. But the remaining three are together. Why would we put them together? Why would we put Asher, Naphtali, and Dan together? That's funny. I thought I was going to bring it on the sheet, but I didn't. I didn't even bring it in my notes. Go back to Parshas Bamidbar, those who have a Tanakh, please. Because this is something worth knowing. Actually, not Parshas Bamidbar, sorry, Parshas Baloska, Bamidbar Perek Yud. Alright, I didn't bring it here at all. Do you have, in Bamidbar Perek Yud, do you have the different camps for when they traveled? Is that there? So, with the fourth camp, right, there are four camps. Each camp is made up of three Shvatim, three tribes. Who populates the last camp? I hope I'm right that it's there. Yep, that's the one. The camp of the children of Dan. And who is with them?
Naphtali.
And? And Asher. Right, that's the idea. Dan, Naphtali, and Asher camp together, and they are the last camp that travels in the Midbar, in the wilderness. Dan is actually identified as Ma'aseif L'chol HaMachanot, the one who gathers everybody in, all the stragglers. You know, Dan sort of picks them up. I guess they have the lost and found probably also. So it makes sense that they're going to be the last three that we're going to list here. It's associating it back with the way they traveled in the Midbar. So we're going to do Asher, and then Naphtali, and then Dan. So first, Asher, if you take a look on your sheet now, at source number 3, I gave you the brachos of Asher. First the one from Yaakov, and then the one from Moshe. May Asher shmei nalachmo, v'hu yitein ma'adane melech. From Asher, his bread is rich, or full of oil, right? That was a good thing. That's not a bad thing. Bread being full of oil. No one like wiping it off with their napkins. And he will give the delicacies of the king, the richest of delicacies. So Rashi there says the reason why it's Shmei Nalachmo, his bread is filled with oil, is because he has olive trees in his area. And they produce olive oil. And then the next bracha that's listed here, the one from Moshe, Ula Asher Amar Baruch Mibanim Asher, that Asher is blessed of all of the sons. Yehi Ritzui Echav V'Tovel Bashemen Raglo. He is the desirable one among his brothers, and he dips his foot in oil. So once again, the olive oil reference, and olive oil being very important, you know, for the Mediterranean diet. So this is beloved to everybody. Also, because if you take a look at his land, flip to the map for a second, Asher has a very large area of land. He does quite nicely. And not only that, but depending on how he reads Zebulun, he may have a lot of seashore. So he does very well in terms of his portion. Continuing in his bracha, Barzel unachoshes min alecha, uchi amecha dav echa. Iron and nechoshet, nechoshet being copper or copper alloy, barzel nechoshet min alecha is your lock. Your lock is copper and iron. What is that a reference to? Take a look at. No, I didn't bring it on here. Oh, I did. I just don't take a look yet. I brought it out of order on the sheet, but we'll explain it in a second. Uchi amecha dav echa is the end of the bracha, which is a very hard phrase to translate. Like your days is dav echa. Dav echa, according to Ramban, which is what we'll see in a moment, means your flow, that which flows from you. So, what in the world does that mean? So now we'll take a look at Ramban in source number 4. On uchi amecha dav echa, he says, Hanir ali b'mila hazos, shehi kamo zav echa. He says, Dav Echa should be read like Zav Echa, which is not odd because Zayin and Dalet do interchange a lot, particularly when you get into Aramaic. So, for example, Zachar in Hebrew is Dichra with a Dalet in Aramaic. So that's not strange. He says, Zav Echa and Dav Echa are the same. And so he explains, Dav Echa and Zav Echa will mean for something to flow. Shetia Arzas Zavas Hashem and Hanizkar. Your land will flow with the aforementioned oil. Vatati Yabo Tovel Raglecha Kol Yomecha Le'olam. All of your days you will dip your feet in this oil. So the bracha is more of the olive oil. Uchi Yomecha Dav Echa. All your days you will have olive oil flowing in your land. And then as far as the barzel and nechoshes min alecha, the lock being iron and copper, in source number 5 he explains, Haya Asher besof Eretz Yisrael. Asher is at the end of Israel. He is on the shoreline. L'kach amar barzel nechoshes min alecha. That's why it says iron and copper are your lock. Sheyi yelo delaso sheyulo delasos nechusha ubriche barzel. He shall have doors of copper and bolts of iron. V'chol haaretz neula bahem, and that will lock the entire land from in front of the enemy. V'hu remez sheyishmor Hashem kol haaretz meoyevu mitnakeim, a reference to God guarding the land from any enemy. Oh, Yomar, Shaloh Yavo Zarim Lishlal Hashem, and where that stranger shouldn't come and steal the oil, because you know that's also a concern when you're out on the shore. So that's the way that he that he takes it. Are we clear? The bracha is emphasizing the olive oil that he has, the fact that he is on the and the fact that he's on the shoreline, and possibly the size of his land. So now we get, in the Psukim, we get the boundary of Asher. And once again, I'll comment where I know something about a city, but there isn't a whole lot to work with. It begins from the south. We're now in chapter 19, sentence 24. Vayetzei agorol hachamishi, the fifth boundary, emerged, lamatei b'nei Asher lemishpechosam, for Asher, per their families. Vahigvulam chelkas v'chali v'veten v'achshaf. Their boundary, and this is not really the boundary as much as these are cities that are they have in the south, are Chelkat Chali, Beten, and Achshaf. I don't know who wants to live in Beten, but that's the way it is. Va'alamelech ve'amad u'mish'al, u'faga b'charmel hayama. It reaches the Carmel by the sea, and by that they mean, according to the Vilna Gaon, Yam HaKarmel is the reference, which makes sense.
The same place
as today,
like where
the Yama Carmel is. Well, the Yama Carmel. Well, what he's referring to is the. Sorry. No. I mean, it's. I don't know why I'm blanking. Here, on your map, you see it. The Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Galilee. That's what he's referring to. Yama Carmel. But that's the. The Kinneret, yes, that's what he's
Naphtali.
Right. The Kinneret is. Sorry, no, that doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry. No, this is sorry. Two separate things. Yama Carmel is separate from the Kinneret. You're right. The I'm jumping ahead to something that we're going to see when we do Naphtali. This is talking about the This is talking about Yama Carmel. Two different things. Ubishichor Livnat, as well as this area of Shichor Livnat, which according to Dat Mikra must be a particular area that had white sand. He suggests that's where you get the Livnat. It's from Lavan, meaning the white sands. Okay, fine. But yeah, it's Carmel is different. V'shav Mizrach HaShemesh. And then he says, in Pasuk Chav Zayin, we're going to give you the eastern cities. Beit Dagon, Upa Beit Dagon being a place that is pre-Israelite in that land, because Dagon was a Canaanite idol. Upaga bizvulun, and that's where he's going to encounter Zvulun, and by that encounter of Zvulun, presumably he's going to have to mean in his southern area. Ubnei Yiftach El, Ubegei Yiftach El Tzafona, right, that's that Gei Yiftach El which we mentioned before, that was the northern boundary of Zvulun. Beit HaEmek Uni'i, but he's going north of Yiftach El. In other words, he has the northern side of Yiftach El, whereas Zvulun has the southern side of it, and Yiftach El itself. Beit HaEmek Uni'iel V'yatza El Kavul Mismol, it goes to Kavul Mismol, in the left hand side, so to speak, left depending on you know which way you're looking at it. That Mikra has a nice discussion about that. Ve'evron Urchov V'chamon V'kana, we're in sentence 28, we're now moving to the northern areas. Adit Sidon Rabbah, all the way up to Great Sidon, which is that city that we mentioned before that Zvulun has access to. So that's in sentence 28. We're now up in the northwestern area. Vishava Gavul HaRama. Then we turn to Rama Vadir Mivtzar Tzor, the city of Mivtzar Tzor. There's nice discussion as well about what place this might be. Does this have any relationship to Tzor, meaning Tyre, which is also along the shoreline? Vishava Gavul Chosa Vayuso Tzosav HaYama. You go out to the sea, and that's what I mentioned before when I said that Zvulun has to have shoreline. But Asher also has to have shoreline. That's the reference right here that we just said. It said it ends at the sea. So that's your key problem. Mechevel Achziva, from the portion of Achziv. So we are now in the western end by the sea. The Uma va'afek u'rechov, as well as the last three cities, Uma, Afek, and Rechov, Arim, Esrim, Ushtayim, v'chatzrehen, 22 cities. Clear? Somewhat? I mean, as clear as it's going to get when I'm telling you for all these cities, I have no idea where they are. But yeah, that's something along those lines. Okay. Just making a note. Something else. Okay.
At the end of the three, though, right, according to Longin, they should have had a four. If it was 22, they must have had four in another place.
Oh, that's an interesting point. Right, if you have 22, then somewhere along the lines, there must have been four. Oh, well, I can't answer for it. He must have had a reason. Okay. Now, the truth is, like, there are various reasons to break the pattern. If you have cities that are next to each other, for example, right? If you're shifting regions, then you have to keep them all in that region. And they don't want to mention one in a pasuk alone. His formula can be made to work. I wouldn't worry a whole lot about it. He didn't bother necessarily explaining it in great detail. But that brings us to Naphtali. And Naphtali starts in Pasuk Lamed Bet, sentence 32, and he's going to run until Pasuk Lamed Tet, sentence 39. So, once again, we ask, how does Naphtali's land fit with the bracha that he gets? Well, take a look on your sheet. Source number 6, where I brought you his two brachos. The first one is Yaakov's, the second one is Moshe's. Naphtali Ayala Shelucha. Naphtali is a hind, a kind of antelope, that is sent forth, that races forth. Hanosein Imre Shafer, which gives Imre Shafer. Imre Shafer means fine speech, says nice things. Unclear what that would have to do with one's land. Ula Naphtali Amar Moshe's bracha. To Naphtali, he said, Naphtali Sivaratzon. Naphtali is satisfied. Umale Birkas Hashem, filled with divine blessing. Yam Vidarom Yerusha. He will inherit, or he will conquer Yam and Darom. Darom, we know, is south. Yam, we know, is west. Take a look at the map on the flip side and tell me where you see south and west in Naphtali.
I see northeast.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you turn it upside down.
When you read Israeli maps, you're supposed to read them upside down.
There you go. Or maybe it was because Moshe had a laptop backwards because someone else was looking at it. No, what is this?
Projector on the screen.
So if you take a look at the sources I brought you here, first of all, in terms of Yaakov's bracha, source number 7, the Medrash and Bereishis Rabbah offers an explanation which does tie that bracha to the land. Remember, it isn't so that everything in the bracha has to tie to their portion. Things in the bracha may have to do with them personally. It may have to do with their story. We know that some of it does, like Shimon and Levi and Yaakov's bracha. They're, you know, part of it is about scattering them among Israel, and part of it is about their careers. So it isn't as though everything has to connect to the land, but the Medrash and Bereishis Rabbah very much wants to, and says in source number 7, Ayala Shelucha means Zo Bik'at Ginosar. This is the valley of, or the fields of, depending on how you take Bik'ah, of Ginosar. Ginosar is the Kinneret. It's another name for the Kinneret. Shehim Maheres es Peroseha Ka'ayala. Its fruit ripens first. It hastens to ripen, just like this very swift animal that he's comparing it to. So calling Naphtali swift doesn't mean that Naphtali personally was, you know, a speedster. But rather, what it's saying is that Naphtali's land will be very swift to ripen its fruit. And then Hanoseinim Rei Shafer, which gives good sayings, fine sayings, Sha'artso Mitbarechet, because its land is blessed. Vehem mevakrim periperosehem lamalachim umeshaprim divrehem. They have this first fruit that they give to the kings, and it improves the words of the kings. Bimhaya beliban alein hayim misratzin lahen. If the kings had something against the people of Naphtali, once they got the gift of the fruit, they would suddenly speak much more nicely. it is sort of the Amelia Bedelia of the Shvatim in that sense, right? As long as she makes whatever the special thing is, everything is good. The terrible book to read to children. Completely. I'm sorry, but it's giving the wrong message. But that's what we're doing here with them and saying, Hanaseim Reishafer, because they produce such fine fruit, it will make everybody speak much more nicely. That's the first part. That's the bracha of Yaakov. What about Moshe's bracha? What's this business of Yam v'Darom Yerusha, conquering south and west? So if you look at the Aramaic, the Targum of Onkelos to it, the Targum is very useful in general when reading the brachas, when reading these blessings. He adds a lot of information. Remember, it's worth knowing. I think a lot of people are not aware. Where does Onkelos come from? I don't mean who wrote it, but what was the point of writing this? It was indeed. It was the language that people spoke at the time. But what did they do with this Onkelos? What did they do with the Targum? So, going back to the days of the Mishnah, you actually had a mitar game. In shul, when they did the Torah reading, you had a commentator. And after every pasuk, after every verse, and there are rules for how many verses can be read before he does this, the translator will then explain what's being read in Kriyas HaTorah. So, you complain now about how long it takes. You have no idea. But that's the way it was done. And he would proclaim the translation in between the psukim. That was what was done. As a matter of fact, in Yemenite communities until today, it continues to be done that way. But because they do a gimel as a jah, they call it tarjum instead of targum. But I visited a Yemenite moshav, and they showed me the book from which they read the tarjum. And you read pasuk, whatever it is, and then the translator will translate. But it wasn't just a translation. It was actually a commentary.
So what language?
In Aramaic. Yeah. It was a commentary, and it was done that way in order for people to learn Torah. They would actually be learning through Kriyas HaTorah. Kriyas HaTorah serves multiple purposes, but one of them was simply educational for the people. And the Targumim, it wasn't just one Targum. There are multiple, and we have quite a few of them that still exist in either partial form or full form. There were different Targumim that were used. Onkelos is the most popular and the most well known because he won. But there were others as well, and very interesting to see the variations between them. It stopped. The general popular understanding is that the Targum stops in communities where they don't speak Aramaic anymore, because what are you going to do? But I've often wondered. There's a comment in a Tosfos that makes it sound like it stopped actually because the church stopped it. Because the church stops, they don't want a public reading of something that they don't understand. Hebrew, going back 1,000 years, the priests had some facility with, plus they had Jews who had been forced to convert out or had converted out on their own who would explain it. Aramaic was a lot tougher. And so it's possible that it actually stopped because the church prevented them from doing it. And that was only stopped in Ashkenazi lands, because the Sephardim tended to live among the Muslims, who did not prevent them from doing it. And so it persists a lot longer in their communities, even after they're not speaking Aramaic either. It's not as though they were speaking Aramaic in Muslim lands. But in any case, the Targum here in source number 7 explains the bracha that the bracha that Moshe gave. Ul Naftali Amar, Naftali Siva Rava. Right? Naftali is Siva Rava. Siva Rava is Siva Ratzon. Right? If you think of Yehei Rava, like if you read Rishmei, right? Yehei Rava Kadamach is Yehi Ratzon Milafanecha. Rava is Ratzon. So, Naftali Siva Rava, he is of sated desire, Umale Birchan Min Kadam Hashem, filled with blessing before God. Ma'arav Yam Gino Sar V'daro Mohi Yiras. He will get the west and south of Yam Ginosar. And since I already told you in 7 that Ginosar is the Kinneret, it means that he gets the southern and western sides of the Kinneret. That's what Moshe is telling them. Yamvidarami Rasha is about the borders of the Kinneret. Another passage which, had I never learned Yahushua, I wouldn't really think about. But now seeing it here, we get a picture of it. So that's the brachos that are given. That's a set of brachos given to Naphtali, and really they focus on the Kinneret area. That's really what it's about. It's about the fruit ripening there. It's about the fruit being great fruit. It's about getting that area, the southern and western boundaries of the Kinneret. So let's take a look at it now in the Navi. And again, you know, most of the cities here are not known to us. Pasuk Lamed Bet, sentence 32. Livnei Naphtali Yetzahagarala Shishi. Naphtali gets the sixth one. Livnei Naphtali Lemishpachosam per their families. Vayigvulam Mechelef Me'elon Bitsa'ananim. Va'adami Hanekev V'yavne'el Adlakum Vayisotz Osav Hayardain. This is giving, according to the Da'at Mikra, the eastern part of Naphtali. So, well, it's all sort of the eastern to the southern, I should say. So their boundary was from Chelef, from Elon Bitsa'ananim. The place Tsa'ananim will indeed show up later in Navi. The Va'adami Hanekev and Yavne'el. Va'adami Hanekev V'Yavne'el. Yavne'el, it's a big memory of Yavne'el being associated with Yavne potentially, but I don't remember where I saw this. The Adlakum Vahisots Osav Hayardain, and it goes eastward to the Jordan. So from Chelef, which you mentioned in the beginning of sentence 33, to the Jordan, and then Vishav Hagvul Yama, then the boundary going to the west, starting from Chelef again and working your way west, Aznot Tavor, that's the upper area of Tavor, as opposed to Kislei Tavor, which the others got. They have the upper part of Tavor, right? So if you imagine, looking at the map again, I want to point it out because it's one of the few places I can identify. The juncture of Yisachar, Zebulun, and Naphtali in the southwest corner of Naphtali, they're all meeting at Har Tavor. Zebulun and Yisachar have Kislo Tavor, the lower sections of Tavor, and Naphtali is getting the upper section, Aznei Tavor. Aznot Tavor, the ears, so to speak. V'yatza misham chukoka, it goes from there, chukoka to chukoka, I suppose. Ufaga bizvulun mi negev, uba asher paga mi yam. He encounters Zebulun in the south, and Asher in the west, right, which we've seen. Uba Yehuda hayardain mizrach hashamesh, as well as a place called Yehuda hayardain, east. What in the world is Yehuda hayardain? So it seems to be the name for the northern Yardain. And Da'at Mikra explains why. I gave you a reference in source number 8 to a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, which identifies Ya'ir ben Menashe. There's this fellow Ya'ir who's from the tribe of Menashe. He's not the son of Menashe, but he's a descendant of Menashe, who has a grandfather who is Chetzron. Chetzron is from Yehuda. He's part of Kalev's family. So so that Ya'ir of Menashe is actually from Yehuda, but he marries a daughter of Machir, who's from Menashe, and so it could be that his area along the Yarden, because that's Menashe's space, was called Yehuda HaYarden. It's sort of this outpost of Yehuda, because his, on the paternal side, he is he's from Yehuda, but he ends up taking land anyway by the Yarden on the eastern side. So so that may be why this is that Mikra's suggestion for why it's called Yehuda HaYarden. Okay, but what he has just outlined for us, more or less, is the southern boundary of Naphtali, flanking Yisachar, Zebulun, and Asher, as you work your way west, and then he mentioned the eastern part of it being this area called Yehuda HaYarden, where he meets Menashe, and then the rest of this is just going to be cities that are there. Pasuk Lamed Hei through Pasuk Lamed Chet, sentence 35 through 38. Ve'arei Mivtzar, the fortress cities, Hatzidim, Tzer, V'chamat, Rakat, V'kinaret. Kinaret, at least we can say, oh, yeah, I know what that is. Chamat and Rakat also come up as border cities in the Gemara. Rakat actually, according to one Gemara, is identified with Tveria. So that one we know. Va'adama v'harama v'chatzor. Chatzor is another popular one. Chatzor we saw as a central city for the Knanim who attacked in the early days in the land. The Kadesh. Kadesh we may know also, but there's an Ir Miklat, is a city of refuge, which we'll get to, that is Kadesh. So that's actually this one. So we do know about Kadesh. Okay. Ve'edrei, the city of Edrei. Ve'ein Chatzor, I think there were multiple Edreis, but Ein Chatzor as well. Ve'yiron u'migdal el, Charem u'beit anat u'beit shamesh. There's another Beit Shamesh. For those keeping score at home, I don't remember how many Beit Shemeshes we've seen, but Beit Shemesh. Arim Chayesre v'chatzrehen, all told, 19 cities and their villages around them. Zos Nachalas Matei B'nei Naphtali, the Mishpachos. Some he'arim v'chatzrehen. That is the portion of Naphtali, the cities as well as the villages. Okay, so what emerges from Naphtali and what we need to remember primarily is the Kinneret. That's really the focus of what's going to Naphtali.
Is there a specific reason why they needed it?
Not that I know of. It's just the bracha that they get. Yeah. And then that brings us to Dan, the last of the group. So I brought you the bracha for Dan again on the sheet in source number 9. First Yaakov's bracha. Dan yadin amo ke'achad shivtei Yisrael. Dan will judge his nation as one of the tribes of Israel. What is that reference to Dan judging the nation? What is that referring to?
Judges are going
to come. Which judge comes from Dan? Shimshon. Right. So it's a reference potentially to Shimshon. Yehidan nachash alei derech shefifon alei orach. Dan will be a serpent on the path. And Shififon is another type of serpent. Alei Orach, again, our Orach is also a word for a path. So he's like a snake along the path. He bites the heel of the horse, and the rider falls backward. And that is understood usually as a reference not to his land, but a reference to Shimshon. Right? Shimshon taking down the entire palace on top of him. So that's Yaakov's bracha. Uladan amar dan gur ayeh yizanek min habashan. And then we get this other interesting pasuk in Moshe's bracha. To Dan he said, or of Dan he said, Dan is like a lion. Yizanek min habashan. So yizanek is a very funny word. It's not a word with a lot of parallels elsewhere. You find in Mishneic Hebrew the term zinuk. So we're going to have to explain what that means. But zinuk is like a spurt of water. Like if you take one example is if you have a barrel and it's under pressure, and then you poke a hole in the barrel, that's a zinuk when the water flows out strongly from there. So Dan is called Yizanek min HaBashan. He spurts forth from Bashan. The problem with that is where is Bashan? North and east. Right? Who was the king of Bashan?
Og.
Who they fought on the east side of the Yarden. Where is Dan?
On the west.
Way southwest. So how in the world does Dan end up being Yizanek bin HaBashan? That's a very hard thing to explain, but fortunately, that's what we're here for. If you take a look on your sheet at source number 10, the Sifri explains both pieces of Moshe's bracha to Dan. Dan gur aryeh, first of all, Dan being like a young lion, Milamed shesamuch lesfar. That teaches that he is next to the border. How does it teach it? V'cholmisha samuch lesfar nimshala arayot. If you look at the brachos that Moshe gives, the ones who are by the border are compared to lions. And that's like what we did with Asher. Right? When we said Asher is along the seashore, and therefore we say his lock should be copper and iron, right? That he should be able to protect everybody inside. So too, we're saying that for Dan, they're by the border, so they also should be, they should be like a lion. It may refer to the sea border, it may refer to the eastern border, according to this idea that he's getting in Bashan, sorry.
It's also sort of with a lion with Shimshon, right?
Yeah.
That's true also, right, you do have him fighting the lions, so maybe there's an association there too.
Yeah,
could be, it would fit. Yizanek min HaBashan, and then this spurting forth from Bashan, what is that? So a spray, maybe spray is an even better word, emerges from one place and then splits towards multiple destinations. Kach shivto shel dan, nota lo chilek b'shnei mekamos. So to dan, we will see, it starts out in this one place, but then it emerges into a second place, this northeastern area of Leshem that he's going to get. And v'chinu omer, and he tells you about the pasuk, which we are going to see, that describes that. So that's the idea of sort of spraying out of Bashan that the Sifri mentions. However, there's another interesting association that's worth knowing about this Bashan, Yizanek min HaBashan, because there is something that spurts out of the Bashan. You can't really see it on this map because the map is too small, but Bashan is the northern region. You actually can sort of make it out. If you look at Menashe on the map, do you see that there's a bold word on the northern border? That's Bashan. That region is Bashan. What body of water do you see that actually ends up coming from Bashan? It's fed by bodies of water that are in Bashan. The Yarden. Imagine the word Yarden for a second in Hebrew, and tell me what words you see in Yarden. Yored, Dan. Exactly. So take a look at source number 11. Now the Gemara in Bechoros. Tanya Nami Hachi, the Brisa says, I'm not going to go into what a Brisa says right now. The Yarden Yotzemi Ma'arat Pamyas. The Yarden emerges from the cave of Pamyas. What is Pamyas? The Banyas. Exactly. Pamyas was Panyas from the Greeks, who, when they occupied it, had a temple for Pan in that spot. So it was Panyas. But because Arabs don't have a letter P, right? Remember Arafat with his please that he used to say, because he didn't say please. So Panyas becomes Bamyas. And the Banyas. Umahalech b'yamashal sibchi u'b'yamashal teveriu u'b'yamashal stone. So the Jordan starts at the Banyas and then travels through other bodies of water that he mentions here all the way to Yam Sidom. What is the Yam Sidom? The Dead Sea. V'holech v'nofel Yam HaGadol. And ultimately, somehow, its waters end up in the Yam HaGadol. I don't really understand geographically how that works, unless Yam HaGadol doesn't mean the Mediterranean. I don't know. V'ein Yarden ela mibeit Yericho ulamata. But it's only called Yarden starting at Yericho, meaning it's fed by other bodies of water, but it's not called Yarden until there. And the reason why it mentions that is because in context, this Gemara is talking about a person who makes a vow, and in particular references the Yarden, which part of the Yarden is meant in his vow, so that's why they tell you which part we call Yarden. But then it continues to say, Amar v'chia bar Abba, Amar v'yochanan, lama nikra shemo Yarden, why is it called Yarden? Sheyored midan, because it descends, yored, from Dan. And he says that's the origin of the name. So the upshot of this, and we'll have to stop here and finish Dan, I guess, next week, but the upshot of what we're saying here is that the bracha for Dan, as given by Moshe, fits with the land. Dan Gur Aryeh being a lion on the border, and now we find out he has two borders, the southwest border and the northeast, this area in the Bashan, which we're going to have to come back to, as well as the Yizanek min HaBashan is a reference either to the fact that he bursts forth to have the Bashan too, or a reference to the Yarden, which emerges from his land in Bashan.
Yeah. It's on the other side of the Yarden.
It's on the other side of the Yarden. We have 2.5 tribes and a little bit of Dan on the eastern side of the Yarden. We'll have to discuss next time how that works and why that happens.
The Golan Heights area. Somehow, it should be ours.
So that will actually hinge on what we see next week about where Leshem is. And the question of whether it's in fact ours at all. But the short answer is it may not be biblical Israel at all.
According to our school.
Okay, well, our school is possible.
No, I'm saying according to this map it is, but not the Bible.
Right. So we'll... this the map here is not that Mikra. This is Wikipedia.
Oh, the Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Sorry, good.
But we've already seen mistakes on it, so I wouldn't hold too much from that.
Thank you.